Chapter 8. Ordained by Angels. I quote again from your pamphlet, the added law was ordained by angels, in the hand of a mediator. All agree that this mediator was Moses, who went between God and the people. The original word for ordained is rendered promulgate by Greenfield, who cites this text as an illustration. Was it true that the Ten Commandments were ordained, or promulgated, by angels, in, or by the hand of Moses? God himself spoke them with a voice that shook the earth, and wrote them with his own finger on the stone tablets. But the other law was given through angels, and written in a book by the hand of Moses. If the reader desires to see some of the instances where the same expression substantially is used, when speaking of the law of Moses, we refer him to Leviticus, chapter 26, verse 49, Numbers, chapter 4, verse 37, chapter 15, verses 22 and 23, and especially Nehemiah, chapter 9, verses 13 and 14, where the distinction is clearly made between the laws which God spoke, and the precepts, statutes, and laws given by the hand of Moses. There are several points in this paragraph, and we will note them in order. First, was this ceremonial law given by angels? Those who hold as you do, say that it was, and quote Galatians, chapter 3, verse 19, as proof. But that is not competent testimony on this point, for it is the text under discussion. But, unfortunately for your theory, it is the only text that you can quote. And so the proof that the ceremonial law was given by angels, is nothing but reasoning in a circle. Thus, you say that Galatians, chapter 3, verse 19, refers to the ceremonial law, because it speaks of a law that was ordained by angels. Then you prove that the ceremonial law was spoken by angels, by quoting Galatians, chapter 3, verse 19, which you have already proved refers to the ceremonial law. This is not proving anything, but is simply begging the question. You started out to show that Galatians, chapter 3, verse 19, has reference to the ceremonial law, because it speaks of a law ordained by angels. In order to make that good, you ought to cite at least one other text in the Bible where it is at least implied that the angels gave the ceremonial law, but this you cannot do. Now, on the other hand, the connection of angels with the giving of the Ten Commandments from Sinai is most clearly marked. I first cite Psalms, chapter 68, verse 17, "The chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of angels. The Lord is among them, as in Sinai, in the holy place." Again, I refer to Deuteronomy, chapter 33, verse 2, "The Lord came from Sinai, and rose up from Seir unto them, he shined forth from Mount Paran, and he came with 10,000s of saints, holy ones, angels, from his right hand, went a fiery law for them." These texts show plainly that the angels of God were on Sinai when the law was spoken. They were there evidently for a purpose, though we cannot tell what. But we have a still more emphatic testimony in Stephen's address, "Ye stiff-necked and uncircumcised in heart and ears, ye do always resist the Holy Ghost, as your fathers did, so do ye." Which of the prophets have not your fathers persecuted? And they have slain them which showed before of the coming of the Just One, of whom ye have been now the betrayers and murderers, who have received the law by the disposition of angels, and have not kept it. The law which these wicked Jews had not kept was the moral law, which Stephen said was given by the disposition of angels, the very same term that in Galatians, chapter 3, verse 19, is rendered ordained by angels. The word diatasso, rendered ordain, means, according to Little and Scott, to range, ordain, establish, to set in order, draw up an army. The word disposition, in Acts, chapter 7, verse 53, is from diataxis, a noun derived from the preceding verb, and means disposition, arrangement, especially a drawing up of troops, order of battle. These words have also the signification of to decree, to will, but the former signification seems to convey the idea of the words as used in the texts quoted. The text under consideration does not say that the angels spoke the law, and we know very well that they did not speak either the moral or the ceremonial law. The Lord Himself spoke them both, the one directly to the people, and the other to Moses. But the angels were there, evidently in their regular order, as the armies of heaven. Just what part they had to act no one can tell, for the Bible does not specify. All I claim is that the scriptures speak of them as being intimately connected with the giving of the moral law, while there is not a text in the Bible which mentions them in connection with the giving of the ceremonial law, and the text in Acts, already quoted, plainly says of the moral law, that it was given by the disposition of angels. The expression ordained by angels is the one upon which those who argue for the ceremonial law in Galatians have placed their principal reliance, but even that is against them. Second, the distinction which is made between the moral and the ceremonial law, namely, that the moral law was spoken by the Lord, and the ceremonial law by Moses, will not hold. The very texts which you cite are against this distinction. I will take the first one, Leviticus, chapter 26, verse 46. It reads, "These are the statutes and judgments and laws, which the Lord made between him and the children of Israel, in Mount Sinai, by the hand of Moses." This is the last verse of the chapter. The first two verses of the chapter read thus, "Ye shall make you no idols, nor graven image, neither rear you up a standing image, neither shall ye set up any image of stone in your land, to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God. Ye shall keep my Sabbaths, and reverence my sanctuary, I am the Lord." And then the chapter goes on with instructions, to keep the commandments of the Lord, to walk in His statutes, tells what judgments shall come upon them if they break the commandments, especially the Sabbath, and closes with the words first quoted. But in all the chapter, there is not a shadow of a reference to the ceremonial law. Your next reference, Numbers, chapter 4, verse 37, has no reference to either the moral or the ceremonial law. It simply states that Moses and Aaron numbered the families of the Kohathites, according to the commandment of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Your third reference, Numbers, chapter 15, verses 22 and 23, has unmistakable reference to the moral law, and to that alone, as will be seen if the 24th, 25th, and 26th verses are read, in connection. I will quote them, "And if ye have erred, and not observed all these commandments, which the Lord hath spoken unto Moses, even all that the Lord hath commanded you by the hand of Moses, from the day that the Lord commanded Moses, and henceforward among your generations, then it shall be, if aught be committed by ignorance without the knowledge of the congregation, that all the congregation shall offer one young bullock for a burnt offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for all the congregation of the children of Israel, and it shall be forgiven them, for it is ignorance, and they shall bring their offering, a sacrifice made by fire unto the Lord, and their sin offering before the Lord, for their ignorance, and it shall be forgiven all the congregation of the children of Israel." All this atoning sacrifice was to be made on account of sins against what the Lord commanded by the hand of Moses. But nothing is sin, except violation of the Ten Commandments. Your last reference, Nehemiah, chapter 9, verses 13 and 14, may have reference to both the moral and the ceremonial law. I will quote the verses, Thou camest down also upon Mount Sinai, and spakest with them from heaven, and gavest them right judgments, and true laws, good statutes and commandments, and madest known unto them thy holy Sabbath, and commandest them precepts, statutes, and laws, by the hand of Moses thy servant. This is the only text of all, to which you have referred, which even by implication, refers to the ceremonial law. And it is certainly a strained implication that limits by the hand of Moses to the last part of verse 14. All the other texts, at any rate, when they refer to any law at all, refer solely to the moral law, which is said to have been commanded by the hand of Moses. You will perhaps say that I have broken down the distinction between the moral and the ceremonial law, and have opened the way for the enemies of the law to confuse the two. But I have not. I have simply quoted the texts to which you refer, and have shown their exact application. There is no chance for confusion concerning the two laws, for we have this plain distinction. The moral law was spoken by the Lord with an audible voice, from the fire and smoke of Sinai. The Ten Commandments are all that were given in this manner, and they alone were written on tables of stone by the finger of God. The ceremonial law was given in a more private manner. This certainly forbids any confusion. Both the moral and the ceremonial law, however, are, as we have seen in the texts quoted, said to have been given by the hand of Moses, and both were written in the book of the law. But there is still this distinction, that the ceremonial law was written only in the book, while the moral law was written on the tables of stone, with the finger of God, and also in a book. That the term, the law of Moses, does sometimes refer to the Ten Commandments, will be evident to anyone who will carefully read Deuteronomy, chapter 4, verse 44, to chapter 5, verse 22. And onward. On the other hand, the term the law of the Lord is applied to the ceremonial ordinances. Thus the terms, the law of Moses, and the law of the Lord, are used interchangeably of both laws.